Kootenai Brown's Cabin. The home of Kootenai Brown is central inside the Kootenai Brown Pioneer Village, and that's fitting. John George Brown was a central figure of the early history of southwestern Alberta. And he was selected in 1966 as the icon after which the village would be named. And in 1970, the building became the beginnings of the Kootenai Brown Pioneer Village. Kootenai's Cabin preserves that pioneering spirit that was so vital to the development of this district. And he's not alone here. The friends, neighbors, and colleagues of Kootenai, and many characters from across the decades, are represented by the village's rendition. But who is this man, Kootenai Brown? The legend of Kootenai Brown begins very simply as John George Brown in Ennistymon, County Clare, Ireland in 1839, born into an English military family. Attending Sandhurst Military College, John was commissioned into the British Army and posted to India during the 1857 mutiny. In 1861, Brown sailed for Panama, taunted by tales of gold in British Columbia. Sailing to Victoria, he traveled up the Fraser River to the Caribou Rush. After 2 years of mining and trapping, Kootenai made $3,000 but lost it in a mining deal. With little more than his clothes, Brown left Williams Creek in the fall of 1864 and got a job laboring on the Fraser River freight boats until word came of another gold strike in the East Kootenays. Brown's luck was no better, so he took a job as a constable. When his pay was reduced, John partnered with four other prospectors in a placer claim. They sold the claim, then set out across the Rockies to check out rumors of another strike at Fort Edmonton. With no knowledge of their direction, the quintet struck east over the mountains with one horse, then traded with the Kootenai First Nations for four more horses. This deal gained John George Brown his nickname of Kootenai Brown, a handle he proudly endured for the rest of his life. The party crossed the South Kootenai Pass, where Brown was captivated by the area's stunning mountain scenery and vowed one day to return. Once on the plains, the gold seekers followed the rivers east, ignorant that they were on the South Saskatchewan River, 400 miles off course from Edmonton. Camping at the mouth of Seven Persons Creek, the party encounters some hostile Nakota, and Brown took an arrow in the back, the head burying so close to his kidneys that his companions were forced to remove it and treat the open wound with turpentine. The party split up as Kootenai and a companion named Goldtooth followed the South Saskatchewan and finally arrived at the Métis settlement of Duck Lake, where Kootenai and Goldtooth lived for the winter and left for Fort Garry, Manitoba in the spring. In 1866, Kootenai went to work for whiskey trader John Gibbons, working along the Cree and the Ojibwa near Portage la Prairie to gather buffalo hides. After a shootout in which a trader and a Minnesota Indian were killed, Kootenai Brown lost interest in the trade, and in April of 1868 he moved to Dakota Territory and hired himself out to the express company of Charles Ruffy. For $50 a month, Kootenai carried the U.S. mail from Fort Stevenson to Fort Benton, Montana. The route depended on a series of way stations where horses and riders were replaced to let the mail keep moving. But amid the tension of the Lakota Wars, station keepers were killed, with hundreds of company horses stolen. When Ruffy's firm was bankrupted, the U.S. Army took over the route and rehired Kootenai to continue the work. Among his fellow couriers at that time was William F. Cody, better known as Buffalo Bill. In May 1868, Kootenai and the Lakota Métis Joe Martin assumed the dangerous Fort Stevenson-Fort Totten route and were captured by the Hunkpapa Sioux Party led by Totanka Yotanka, who we know today as Sitting Bull. Both carriers would have been killed instantly had Martin not spoke the language. With buckskin apparel, leathery face, and flowing long hair, Kootenai was easily mistaken for a Métis. Brown and Martin were spared their lives, though as a warning to the army, they were stripped of their horses, guns, their mail, even their clothing. So naked, foot sore, and bug-ridden, the scouts eventually walked to Fort Stevenson, where a sentry asked Kootenai, "What's up?" In reply, "Oh, nothing much. The Sioux have your mail, horses, and our clothes, and came very near to getting us." Kootenai stayed off the trail for a few months, but resumed his duties in November of 1868. In working with the Métis mail carriers, he met and married Olivia Leone in 1869. The Browns lived at Fort Totten and Stevenson, where Kootenai often hunted buffalo. In 1872, Kootenai joined the U.S. Army 7th Infantry as a scout and served until June 1874. When his pay was reduced, he resigned and joined Olivia's people in the nomadic hunting camps. For 3 years, the Browns traveled as the Métis caravans, followed the northern bison herds throughout the Cypress Hills, the Milk River Ridge, the Missouri Coteau, the Qu'Appelle Valley, and northern Montana. Hunters like Kootenai owned several swift horses, buffalo runners they called them, capable of outrunning stampeding herds. Each family was responsible for butchering its own kills, as Olivia would have spent her life doing. But as the herds dwindled, Kootenai Brown was forced into the crude and dangerous business of wolfing. In the spring of 1877, Kootenai Brown came to a camp near Fort Benton, where the fur merchant Louis L. invoked an unsettled debt. Their disagreement turned violent, and Kootenai plunged a butcher knife into L.'s abdomen, wrenched it sideways, and nearly severed the man in half. As the life bled out of L., Kootenai galloped out of the camp, realizing he'd committed cold-blooded murder. Choteau County Sheriff William Rowe pursued and arrested Brown on the Marias River. During his incarceration, Brown attempted suicide by thrusting a small knife into his chest. The new sheriff, John J. Healy, who'd arrived to serve his breakfast, saved his life. Medical attention was administered, and by autumn, Kootenai was fit to stand before a grand jury in Helena on the charge of murder. Brown entered his plea, not guilty, by reason of self-defense. 2 days later, he was acquitted and saved from hanging. A trial was the turning point of Kootenai Brown's life. Though he rarely spoke of the incident, there is little court evidence to explain why the case was dismissed. Proclaiming that the two sweetest words in the English language were not guilty, he decided to settle at those sky-blue lakes that he'd first seen at the South Kootenai Pass, where his formidable legend would only continue to grow. After a decade of rough riding adventure and a close brush with the hangman's noose, Kootenai Brown crossed the Canadian border, fulfilling the vow made a dozen years earlier to reside in the place of my dreams. With Olivia and their two daughters, Kootenai moved to Waterton Lake and built a cabin on the shore. The abundant trout in the lakes and streams provided steady income. A wagon load of fish could sell in McLeod for $75, and Kootenai Brown could stay and chat up the Mounties, freighters, and traders like the old notorious Fred Canoose. Kootenai and Fred Canoose partnered in a trading post on Waterton Lake, swapping furs with the Tonaxa, Salish, and Piikani from Montana for dry goods and whiskey, in spite of alcohol prohibition on both sides of the border. Brown and Canoose also gambled with their customers, competing in foot and horse races and target shooting. Less than honest in their dealings, on several occasions they turned back winnings just to spare their lives. When American authorities discouraged their charges from crossing the border, Brown and Canoose were put out of business. Kootenai was a reputed hunting and tour guide, and willing to aid newcomer ranchers and settlers. The pioneers of Pincher Creek were endearing of his visits and his help, and reciprocated with a drink whenever the scout would visit. In 1881, Senator Matthew Cochran located an open range ranch at the Big Hill west of Calgary. But when the winter of 1882 and 83 proved disastrous, Kootenai recommended that the Cochrans take up a range at the Waterton River, where the winters were milder. The senator's son, William Cochran, managed the Waterton operation and appreciated Kootenai's advice. As prominent investors scoped out Alberta, Kootenai accepted guiding assignments from absentee stockmen and tourists, such as Alexander Stavely Hill of the Oxley Ranch and the Earl of Latham on hunting and fishing expeditions into British Columbia. Clients marveled at the dichotomy of an educated British officer with the flair of an American mountain man, sporting flowing hair, buckskins, and a broad slouch hat. While Kootenai was away on a commission in 1883, Olivia gave birth to their son Leo, but never fully recovered from the childbirth. She tragically perished soon after. Unable to care for the small children, Kootenai arranged for Father Lacombe to take them in, and they were scattered between mission schools and convents and never reunited. When the revolutionary Louis Riel rallied the Métis at Batoche in March of 1885, the militia was called out. With a native uprising imminent, local tribes were rumored to be in sympathy with Riel. Rancher John Stewart organized 115 cowboys into a cavalry corps, the Rocky Mountain Rangers. Kootenai Brown galloped to Fort McLeod, covering 40 miles in under a day to offer his services as chief scout to the brigade. He marched with the corps to Medicine Hat, where the Rangers set up headquarters. At Seven Persons Creek, Brown recalled the 20-year-old incident where at that very location he'd taken an arrow into the back. Revisiting the scene, he pulled 5 slugs out of a cottonwood tree and discovered 2 skulls along the creek, a stark reminder of an earlier time. Despite the mobilization, southern Alberta remained quiet, and the Rangers were discharged. For his efforts, Kootenai received the Northwest Medal and a 320-acre grant of land. Kootenai's service returned something else more valuable. While patrolling with the Rangers in the Cypress Hills, he met and took in a Cree First Nations woman, Chipete Takakwakason, translated as Blue Flash of Lightning. He brought her back to Waterton as his new wife and gave her the name of his sister, Isabella. Familiarly, Kootenai called her Nichimus, which means sweetheart. Isabella was a devoted companion, adept at hunting, butchering meat, and curing and tanning hides. She accompanied him often on hunting and fishing trips and kept the household when Kootenai left to scout for the mounted police. In 1887, Kootenai packed supplies through the Crow's Nest Pass to supply and guide Superintendent Sam Steele's troop of police, returning to McLeod from an assignment at Kootenai Landing. In 1887, Kootenai accepted his military land grant on the east bank of the Waterton, which was then known as the Kootenai River, where he and Isabella built a comfortable 3-room cabin. In this dwelling, Kootenai and Isabella spent 20 years together, where Brown made the most historically significant work of his life. In 1895, Kootenai began a fight to have his beloved Kootenai Lakes set aside as a national park to preserve the rapidly disappearing species such as bighorn sheep, grizzly, and mountain goat. Brown recruited several political allies to pressure the Dominion government. On May 30th, 1895, the government set aside the Kootenai Forest Reserve. In January of 1981, Kootenai was appointed fishery officer for the reserve and in 1910 was named a forest warden. He harassed the government to have the reserve expanded, and finally in 1911, the Kootenai Forest Reserve was elevated to status as Waterton Lakes National Park. In 1914, the park was enlarged to 423 square miles. As acting superintendent, Kootenai was responsible for the supervision of road building, trail cutting, and fighting forest fires. But when Waterton required a full-time superintendent, Brown was passed over due to his advanced age. Kootenai accidentally created a new industry when he discovered oil on Cameron Creek, the first petroleum found in southern Alberta. With William Aldridge, a Mormon farmer from Cardston, they collected the oil into gallon jars and sold it to local farmers for wagon axle grease. Soon, speculators began trading in stock and bringing in drilling equipment to develop Alberta's first oil well. But the boom didn't last, as profitable production could not be sustained at the place they called Oil City. Bringing heavy equipment in on muddy roads halfway up a mountain ate away at expenses, and Kootenai didn't make a dime. On July 18, 1916, Kootenai passed away at the age of 77, bequeathing all of his possessions to Isabella. He was buried at Waterton Lake beside his first wife, Olivia. Isabella lived with neighbors until her own death in 1935 and was buried on the flanking side of Kootenai Brown.